Hi, I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. I am really pleased that I have a guest on who is my own spiritual director, Janine Brielt. She comes from Catholic tradition, and she was trained in Ignatian tradition with Ignatian spirituality. She has a lot of interesting things to say about discernment and understanding how God is always at work, as well as some interesting comments about the Pope and his role and how Ignatian tradition, because he's a Jesuit, how that plays into his role as Pope. It's really a fascinating talk, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So for people who don't have any idea about Ignatian spirituality and that tradition, could you enlighten us about what are some of the main precepts and the perspective from that tradition?
What I know and what I have, how I feel I have been formed, and what I offer to other people in the light of Ignatian spirituality is a sense of God being at work all the time in our life. Okay? And that we are invited to notice how God is at work. Ignatian spirituality can be summed up in finding God in all things. Okay? There is nothing that that is out of his realm, and we know this to be true, of course. But this is more than just head knowledge; it becomes really an experiential knowledge. This is what we seek to really, to really know. Deep down, that God is at work in my life. And I know this because I've been graced with an awareness to recognize what God is doing and how God is, and not just in my life, but in my world. Of course, in everybody's life, but in my life and in my world, always at work for the good. So I think one of the big things about Ignatian spirituality, from my perspective, is growing in that awareness. Growing in the awareness to notice, how God is present, so that I may more fully respond to his call, however it might come. So Ignatian spirituality, one of the terms that I remember from my training was, it's an apostolic spirituality, which means that it's contemplative in action. It's a both and. The need for that intimate relationship with God so that I can labor with him in promoting the kingdom. That's part of the spiritual exercises. It's all about finding what my call is and living that out to its fullest every day in the whatever way it comes.
Right, and maybe you can shed a little light for people who don't know, or for people who aren't from the Catholic tradition. Now that there's a Pope that is a Jesuit, I have never been able to talk to anybody in depth about how he might see the world differently or act in the world differently than maybe predecessors because of the tradition from which he comes. And I don't know if, not that you're intimate friends with him or something, but not yet. Anyway,
not yet.
I was really hoping he'd come to the Jesuit Center when he gets over here, but wouldn't that be fun? But I think there would be a pretty big crowd. But I was kind of interested in what you thought he added brought to the role that he's in now.
That's a really good question, and I may not have been able to answer that with any real insight, but because I have just finished, I'm almost finished reading his letter on the joy of the gospel, it's called. And it's so wonderful. Oh my gosh, it's really very such a prophetic word, I think, because it challenges us greatly in many areas of our life. And I notice when I was reading it that there, you know, there's definite Ignatian, I don't know, just, you know, I could just see the Ignatian spirituality coming out of that. Particularly when he talks, you know, he used that very language that I did of, you know, how God is at work. He says the Spirit is at work, always seeking to change, to transform, to bring to newness, to bring to, you know, to wholeness, the mess we're in, basically. You know, he talks about that. He talks about our call to make a better world and the responsibility that we have as Christians to, you know, promote the kingdom. I mean, it's just quite remarkable and wonderful to me that that he is writing this work and has just put another one out now on the environment that I'm looking forward to reading, because both of them, I know, are going to touch areas that are in great need right now in our world. So I think he brings Ignatian spirituality into what he does. Someone else might not see that, you know, but I see it, and I'm just I'm excited about it. You know, I love the man.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot of attention and a lot of very positive attention that that even surprised me in from places that would not normally be maybe that positive towards Christianity. Yeah. And one of the things, and I'm kind of talking from the outside, although I think he's doing amazing things, and I love how he's kind of what it seems like turning a lot of things upside down in a very, what seems like very healthy way. And some of the things I noticed anyway, is that there is he is much more simple in how he dresses and how he approaches things, and he has kind of, at least to me, seems to have cast off a lot of the what seems like regalness of the role and the title. That he's more approachable and human, if you want to say. Yeah. You know, he's more like one of us or whatever.
And we need that so badly.
Yeah.
We need that. Yeah, he's gone back to the basics here, you know?
Yeah, it is really neat. And then talking about when he has said that the church should be poor and identify with the poor, is a kind of, you could almost say, controversial thing to say when you consider the opulence of that role and in history, you know, sometimes a checkered past with a great accumulation of wealth and things like that. And cleaning up the corruption of the Vatican Bank and things like that. And it's very refreshing. It's very refreshing to see that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's very glorifying to God that he has a humble approach like that. I just love that.
I know. And so I hope he lives long enough to do all that, you know. Well, that's all in God's hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And so with St. Ignatius of Loyola, what can you tell us about him? And I know he was a reformer and, you know, had the Society of Jesus, but for people who've never heard of the man and don't really understand, like, what could you tell us about a little background?
Yes. Well, St. Ignatius, you know, was born in 1491. So that's you know, over 400 years ago, and yet his message continues to change people's lives through the power of God at work in them. He was a soldier, you know. He was into fighting battles. He was very chivalrous and a ladies' man, and you know, really just those were the important things to him. And then he got shot in the leg with a cannonball, as you can imagine, and you know, he was a very proud man too, you know, dressing up in all of his soldier attire. So when he got shot in the leg, they had to do some kind of surgery, as they would have entry, as it would be in those days. Mm. And when it healed, his leg was shorter and the bone was sticking out. He didn't like that, so we had them break it again and redo it.
Oh, can you imagine? Goodness.
And that's the kind of pride the man had, you know. But while he was laying in the bed recuperating, he was getting very bored, so he asked for something to read, and they brought him books, and all they had was these love stories, you know, like the Harlequin series, you know. And he read all those, and he said, well, you know, what else you have, you know? So they came in with A Life of Christ and The Life of St. Dominic and St. Francis. And he read them, and you know what he said to himself? You know what? I can do that. So he just made up his mind that he was going to be like they were, Dominic and Francis, and he just had a real strong conversion experience, and life just took on a whole new way for him. But the biggest thing was he had an experience of God's presence by the side of the River Cardenere, in which God revealed to him more, he says, more than anyone could ever learn in school. Mm. It was like a revelation of God, you know, and everything just came to him, and it caused him to just change his whole life. And he just went to school, and he just got involved, and he began to realize, I think, the biggest thing about this, what really made the difference for him, just to go back one bit, when he was reading those novels, and then he was reading the lives of the saints, he noticed something very interesting. After he would read the novels, they would really get him excited, you know, and he'd say, oh man, this is cool. And then when he'd finish, he'd just kind of get depressed. Hmm. When he read the lives of the saints, Francis and Dominic, he would be very enthusiastic. And when he finished, that feeling didn't go away. Hmm. This was the beginning of his understanding of the discernment of spirits. Hmm. You know, the whole gift of discernment, which Ignatius is known for, came through that experience of realizing how the spirit, the good spirit and the evil spirit, are what work in our lives, moving us. Yeah. So the gift of discernment is one of the big hallmarks of Ignatian spirituality. And it's discernment that has to do with discerning between two goods. Mm. Not discerning between what is good and what is not good. Mm. That would be a decision, you know. You know what's not good. You're not going to do what's not good.
Right.
But you have an option here of two goods. Which way are you going to go? That's where discernment comes in. And he has his rules for the discernment process built right into the spiritual exercises, which is that 30-day retreat experience. Mm-hmm. And those rules can be applied to any life at any time. Hmm. Wonderful gift. Hmm.
And so I'm sure when people are meeting with you for direction, they will often be in trying to discern something in their lives. And you draw from the exercises to help them make their way through.
Absolutely, absolutely, because they are a wonderful gift, mm-hmm. and there's so much, how would you say, it's like, you know, people, after you go through it, sometimes they just say, duh, I knew that, you know, I just never thought about it in that way, you know, so, I mean, I could go into that, I don't know if you want me to or not, but...
Yeah, sure.
I just think that the rules for discernment of spirits are a great gift, and I'll just give a little basics, okay, because it's much more complicated than this little conversation can cover, mm-hmm. although it's not really complicated, it's just there's a lot to it. Mm-hmm. But he would say that when a person is oriented to God and desires to please God, then God confirms that and gives graces of know, peace and joy and a desire to move on. But the enemy of our human nature doesn't like it. So that's when the enemy of our human nature gives an opposite movement towards that person. So for example, let's see if I can figure out a good example to give you. When a person is in a good place, in a sense that they're desiring to follow God, the enemy doesn't like it, so sets up blocks. Those who are earnestly striving, you know, like I just said, whose orientation is towards God, and they desire to please God. And God, you know, from his part, is gracing them with a sense of peace and joy and love for God and all of that. Then the evil spirit starts to harass with anxiety, fallacious reasoning, you know, wait a minute, how could God love you? Remember what you did last Tuesday? Come on, get real. You know? So the enemy goes against. So if you know this, you say you learn this, you understand, well, that's not of God, that feeling, that thought. It's a thought, really, it's not of God. The good spirit wants to give courage and strength, and the enemy wants to do the opposite. On the other hand, when a person is not seeking to please God, but rather, you know, going from sin to sin and living a very raucous life, well, the enemy's very happy, right? So it just keeps nurturing that. Whereas the Spirit of God is, you know, stinging the conscience with, you know, making the person become aware that, stinging the conscience and trying to call the person back. So the two opposing forces are at work in our lives. And he goes, you know, he takes a number of paragraphs in the exercises to help people better understand this, because it's like if we know this, we can be forewarned, you know, and be ready to resist and reject these negative things that bring us down. And this is very common, you know, that people feel, in my experience, oftentimes people coming for direction for the first time are really grappling with the sense of God's love for them. And it takes a while of prayer and openness to that grace to come to realize, God's unconditional love for them. So they're hearing, you know, these negative thoughts. That, you know, so many people come in with a poor self-image. It's just the product of our culture, I guess. And they don't know that God loves them. And that's, you know, that's the primary grace that we need to take the next step. It might be. So there's a whole process of how to come to the right. It's kind of like a decision making process, but it's a decision that involves discernment. So it's not just a decision. How would you distinguish that? It's prayerful. Okay, it's spirit led. Anybody can make a decision, but not everybody can discern. There's grace involved in that.
And, you know, because you've seen so many people over the years and directed so many people, and you find that this sort of unworthiness that people come to you with at first, this is like this first obstacle they have to push through to get to the other side. You know, how do you help? What is the way to help people? Is it like helping them see lies that they've believed, or helping them reconnect with God? And how do you find your way?
Well, I think what we hope for is awareness on the part of the directee, that when you grow in awareness, you begin to notice how God is present. You know? So sometimes the role of the director is to help a person notice.
Mm.
You know, with a question maybe like, how do you think God was present in that circumstance?
Mm.
Was, you know, do you have a sense that God might be at work there? You know, just to try to help the person to begin to think in a different way and to begin to notice what God is doing. Because like I said, God is doing.
Mm-hmm.
God is at work. We just don't notice.
Mm.
So, how, you know, to help people get to recognize, and sometimes it's in... it's in retrospect more than, you know, it doesn't, you know, you have to notice from experience how God was present in that moment.
Mm.
And that's, I think that's part of what we, what directors try to help people to do.
Mm-hmm. And was it your experience, did you also struggle with the same things when you were in direction at first as you, or maybe you had a different experience than that, but did your director guide you in a similar fashion about awareness?
Yeah, I think that well, it's something that we continue to struggle with too, in a way, you know.
Mm.
You forget, you know, sometimes you have to be reminded, you know, the Spirit of God has to jar you and jolt you oftentimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe I could just share a quick experience that I had. That I think that God is amazing. You know, I was feeling kind of remorseful because I seemed to be so preoccupied with things that were going on in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling I'd go to prayer and my mind would go to those things, you know. And I was feeling kind of badly about that, you know. I just was having a hard time praying. I couldn't, you know, focus. I was just preoccupied.
Mm.
And I was talking to God about that, and I was kind of apologizing, you know, seeking forgiveness for being so darn preoccupied with the stuff that's, you know, of the world that was my life was with at that moment.
Mm.
And anyway, so I talked to God about that, and, you know, after a moment, I had a sense that God said to me, you know what, I'm preoccupied with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, so that, you know, that's wow, you know what I mean? That's a, what a wonderful word from God, you know? Now, maybe I heard it because I've been desiring to be in tune with what God might want to say or do in my life, you know?
Mm.
Maybe somebody else might have heard it and just dismissed it as coming from them.
Hmm.
I don't know. But I think that, you know, if I were to share that with a spiritual director, it would be affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's part of, I think, what, for me anyway, I think that's what a spiritual director does, is to affirm all that God is doing in a person's life and help that person to grow in awareness.
For somebody who's really struggling, maybe they're even locked in a sinful situation, or they're just blinded to God and they're not aware yet, or, you know, when you say to them, where do you see God, and they can't see him, or they see that him sort of wrongly, in the sense that in a way that wouldn't be true to God's nature. I don't know if that ever, if you come across that, and what happens next?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're bringing up something that I think should be said too. The fact is, the director is, it's a poor word for that place, you know. You're not directing, okay? It's not a good word, but we're so used to it now, we hang on to it. The Spirit of God is at work in that situation where the director and the directee are meeting. It is the Spirit of God that's the primary director, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in a circumstance where things don't seem to be going the way you wish they were, that's not your business, okay? It's God's business.
Mm.
So you do what you feel you can do and you trust God to take care. And it's like, it's almost like gardening, and I'm into that big right now. And I was saying that, you know, the motto of the gardener at the beginning of the season is be patient.
Mm.
Things will grow. And I think it's the same in the spiritual direction experience. You're not going to see, a conversion experience in sitting in the chair there every time you sit with somebody.
Mm.
That's not what we're about. It's a journey. And we have to let God go at God's pace, not my pace.
Mm.
So, you know, if you run into an image of God problem, like you're describing, I think, you can't tell somebody to change their way of thinking. You got to let God do that.
Mm.
So you just continue to let them talk, and you affirm what you can, and take the process one step through an interventional question, and just see where it goes. And don't worry about it, because you know what? God loves that person more than you do.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I think that letting God handle it really can go against our natural inclinations, that we want to fix and control things.
Yeah, that's right.
And help someone and solve their problems.
Yeah. We're not into problem solving. We're not into counseling. We're not into fixing.
Mm.
We're into journeying with a person.
Mm-hmm.
And the focus of the spiritual director is on that person's relationship with God. That, you know, you're there to listen primarily. Compassionate listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that if you come out of a directing session and you maybe have spoken 10 minutes of the time, well, you probably did a good job. Because really, listening, compassionate listening is such a gift to people. When you think about it, you know, you're going to sit down with someone and they're going to listen to you and be focused on your situation, your relationship with God. How often do you find that? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like getting yourself out of the way enough. And I guess, you know, directors are usually in supervision with someone, and they will bring up things with their supervision of where they got yanked out, and
that's right.
Right. So
that's,
maybe you can explain that a little.
That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. Since I've moved here, my supervision has consisted of a peer group.
Mm.
Right. There are four of us, four right now, and we meet once a month, and one of us presents a situation that we can all learn from and talk about and help one another with and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really very good to do this. It's even better if you can find a one-on-one supervisor. And I'm working on that, because I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a person that you can just bounce things off of. To remind yourself that you got to get out of the way half the time, you know?
Yeah, and I can see how, I mean, that's why you have to get the right kind of director that isn't going to, like, be judgmental or have an ego or something like that, where it would get in the way of God working more fully in the person's life.
That's right. That's why training is so important.
Mm.
You know, to go through a training program and complete it means that the people who are involved in training you feel that you are able to, fulfill this ministry without falling into the traps that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and then when you're directing somebody and you find yourself getting sort of sucked into their story or their maybe it's an emotional you feel connected emotionally and you're feeling like you want to rescue them or something like that.
Yeah.
What do you do in your own heart? Like what happens in your mind and your heart during that during that exchange of what's happening there?
Well, you know, you do end up loving these people that you work with, and you care about them. And, you know, sure, you would like to take away their pain and suffering. But I think you also know that that's not why you're there. So there's a sense of, how could I say? For me, anyway, I have an element of hope that runs in me, that I know this is going to be okay. I just kind of have a trusting hope that God's at work here, even in the mess. Okay, and I don't find myself getting sucked into it, because I just believe that what I'm doing is, I'm not sitting down having coffee with somebody, okay? This is ministry. This is, it's set apart time. It's holy time. It's sacred time. It's not about me. It's not about my emotions. You know, maybe when it's all over, I can deal with that. But in the midst of it, my focus can't be there. Mm. And, you know, there is all of this transference and counter-transference and all that stuff that we have to be aware of. I'm not denying that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, being aware of it doesn't mean you get sucked into it either. Mm-hmm. You know? One of the things you can say to I say to myself sometimes, okay, this is rising up in me right now. Mm. I'm just going to put it aside and talk to God about it later. Mm. You know, I consciously say that. I'm going to put that away for now. Mm-hmm. To just put it aside. Mm-hmm. Or it may rise up to me and I might feel like, you know, I need to process this right now. So maybe I need to say to the person, you know, something's surfacing in me right now that I'm wondering if there's a connection here that would be helpful. Not for me to vent or anything like that, but mm-hmm. maybe it's going to be something that I am discerning within myself. It would be good for this person to know that I've been there too and I know what that's like.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But that's not a usual way of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it's not about me. It's mm-hmm. about them. But there may be a time when that would make sense and would be helpful. Mm-hmm. So, that helped.
Yeah. And one thing I've been kind of curious about, too, is when people come to you uninformed about direction, uninformed about your role. I know you do spend some time kind of laying the groundwork at first of a little bit of what they can expect, but I'm sure that sometimes because of the prominence of counseling and therapy is that mm-hmm. maybe sometimes they expect you to play those roles, which is so different than, it's not a problem-based, you know, conversations, you know, where the person is right. trying to get over maybe a trauma or something. And do people tend to slip into thinking of you as a counselor in that role, or like how do you wind up navigating some of that territory?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, sometimes. I have on occasion, not recently, but I have on occasion talked to a person about the help they might get from getting together with a counselor mm-hmm. to deal with some of these issues, because that's not our call here. That's not what we're about here. Mm-hmm. So clarifying, I think, is important at the very beginning too. And you know, they might try to slip into it, and you know, sometimes there can be a little bit of overlapping, but I try to avoid that because I'm not a trained counselor. Mm-hmm. You know? But I think that sometimes, like you say, people do not understand the difference. So you have to play it out, you know, and, mm-hmm. and be honest with people. I haven't had, you know, problems with that, really. Mm-hmm. Gotta be truthful, you know. Gotta know your limits.
Right.
Know your limits when you're involved in people's lives.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I wanted to speak with you, and because a lot of my listeners will be from Protestant traditions that have sometimes been suspicious of directors in the sense of not wanting to be, not thinking of it as this is a way for someone to hold something over me or boss me around or something like that, right? All of the bad, you know, unfortunately, the stigmas that have come with abuse and things like that. And so I've been trying to, and there's plenty of other people in my situation and from a more Protestant evangelical tradition who greatly benefit from directors and are directors. And but for the typical church-going Christian and Protestant tradition, there really is a big gap of either misunderstanding or just just an ignorance of kind of not knowing what we're talking about and what is actually supposed to happen or what they can expect. And so what would you say to someone who thinks that, you know, direction is for me and I would love to get into a relationship like this? What could they expect and how would they find someone who is properly trained and who would have, you know, their best interests in mind?
Yeah, that's a good question. But just let me preface it by saying I don't think Protestants are the only ones that have misinformation about direction. Yeah. I think that's true of Catholics, too.
Okay.
But there, you know, like that peer group I mentioned, you know, four people, you know, two of us are Catholic and two are Protestant.
Okay.
There's a lot of spiritual direction stirring up in the Protestant traditions. And it's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And people are searching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, out of curiosity, maybe. I think there's a number of things you can do when you're looking for a spiritual director. You know, you can go to your pastor, mm-hmm. and maybe they'll know, but maybe they won't, too. You know, I don't know where they would be at. Probably one of the best tools would be to go to the Spiritual Directors International website. Mm. And there's a link in there for the Seek and Find, it's called. And it's a list of all spiritual directors who have joined Spiritual Directors International in the whole world, you know. And mm-hmm. they're listed by territories. Mm-hmm. They're listed by religious affiliation. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, who's around here that I might be able to, you know, connect with? Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to, and then of course you have, you know, word of mouth is also a very good way to find somebody. But one of the things I say to people when I begin, when I meet someone for the first time, is I say, yeah, I don't know if this is going to work. Mm. You know, we'll see how we do together. Let's meet three times, and then we'll look at it. We'll talk about it and see whether or not, you know, this is a good fit. Mm. Because this is not, you know, I'm not going to be offended because this is ministry. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have to click in a way. Okay, so I think that Spiritual Directors International, also known as SDI, on the website can be a great help to people looking for a director. Mm.
And for people who I'm assuming that a lot of people who would listen to this would have a religious tradition that they'd be drawing from. But I know that directors are also, like, you're not trying to get people to convert to Catholicism, or, I mean, that's never really, that would be a real overstep to, like, proselytizing, right?
No.
Right.
No.
It can be from any.
And this is the thing. Mm-hmm. The director can be from any tradition because the focus is on the person's relationship with God. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, spiritual practices don't enter into it. Of course they do. But directors, as far as I know, and the ones that I know, are open to people of goodwill, people who desire to grow in their relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And that's enough for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think... you know, people who are spiritually seeking, you know, I think of people who have either been rejected by the church, maybe for their choices or their lifestyle or something, or people who've had a negative experience in the church and have rejected it, but they still feel, you know, they're still spiritually thirsty, and they know they are, and they're seeking someone to help them find their way. Have you ever encountered someone who was hostile to Christianity or things like that, or do you find, I know you will look for the most common ground and the most, like, I'm just kind of curious as to people who come who are from no tradition or even have had a lot of, you know, have a lot of baggage from religion.
Well, I haven't had that experience, so I really can't speak of it, you know. I would find it difficult to imagine someone taking that step of coming if they're filled with that, you know, with anger. And I mean, they might, but I have not had that experience.
Yeah, so you have mostly been, have you mostly directed people from, in general, Christian tradition?
Mostly Christian. I did have a person that I was working with last year who was a Hindu. He was not Hindu. Mm-hmm. His directee was Hindu. I was working with a director. And he was Unitarian, and he was directing a Hindu. How you like that? And I'm a Catholic, so that was quite a... But you know what? Our focus was on relationship with God, so it really, it amazes me how it works. I mean, it's obviously that God is doing what God does.
Yeah. You know, as I've been... as I've been reading what Thomas Merton recently... are you still there?
Yep.
Okay. I noticed how he, in his later years, had a lot of dialogue with people from Buddhist tradition, and I've noticed too that there's a lot of interest in Buddhism in this country, probably an Americanized version of it. But I see some connections between Christian mysticism and contemplative practice, and that, not that I know that much about Buddhism, but from what I do know, that there is some crossover there. I don't know if you see it, or if you how much you think that they can kind of help each other out. I don't know if that makes any sense, but do you see any connections between those two in terms of
practice? Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't know a lot about Buddhism either, but I do know, you know, I was caught by the whole loving kindness business that comes out of Buddhism, and the whole sense of peace, and you know, some of those qualities that that are promoted there are certainly qualities that we would also desire. I think you know, we're beginning to recognize more and more the good that's in other traditions, with an openness to sharing that,
And being able to learn from people who see things differently, being able to still learn and glean from some of the things. I'm a big fan of the On Being podcast with Krista Tippett, and I don't know if you've listened to that, but it is just fantastic. And this week was John O'Donohoe. He was fantastic. He passed away, I believe, in 2009 or 10, and he had been a priest for 19 years, and what he said, something kind of beautiful, was that what is helpful, and I'm not sure exactly how he put it, but what is helpful from Buddhist tradition is being very aware right now where you are, But that what Christianity, what's beautiful about Christianity, alongside that is the intimacy of God, and the presence of God in an intimate way, not just this infinite part of God, but the loving care of God.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really neat, that sometimes how he said we will often live in the future or the past.
Right.
But that Buddhist tradition is about now, and that
that's
sometimes
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that is something spiritual that is very, you know, very helpful for us if we're kind of stuck in our head. I'll get sort of stuck in my head and thinking about where am I right now and what can I be aware of right now and where is God right in this moment.
That's a big part of the noticing that I was talking about earlier. It's not just noticing what happened yesterday, but it's also being conscious, growing in consciousness, growing in awareness of what's happening right now within me and around me, you know? Yeah, the Buddhist tradition talks about the now. I love that.
Now, one of the things that that I still think about when we met together a few years back was a conversation I had with you about my son, how he was going through a really difficult period, and I was pretty wound up about it, I think. And I remember that you were talking about God is at work, which you would say a lot to me, but you also said God is at work in your son. And I know that I knew that, but you calling it out was just one of those like moments where everything becomes crystal clear, and you think of the reality of that is very, very soothing and calming, because you realize that you don't have to worry about all those situations, that you can be at peace knowing with just a real vibrant faith that we serve a God who has not turned his back, but he's working in this very moment, and even in someone who would not seem to be the case, or at that moment wouldn't seem to be the case,
right.
In our relationships. And I wonder if people come to you often, I'm sure, with relationship issues or situations. Is that a common insight that comes up?
Well, yeah. Well, sure. People come with their life, because spiritual direction is about the connection of God in your life. You know, your prayer life, your life that you live with people. I mean, that's relationships are, you know, that's, I think it was Thomas Merton that you just mentioned, who talked about relationships. They're like the grist, you know, that they're the tuning fork. They're the way in which we work out our salvation, you might say. That's what God has given us. He's given us one another, you know. So certainly relationships are a big part. Maybe it's children, maybe it's spouses, you know. And I think people need to be affirmed in the awareness that God is very much a part of all that's going on in that, and helping them to take one step towards, you know, forgiveness, maybe. One step towards freedom, whatever that might look like for them, is a big part, I think, of what we do.
Well, I will probably draw it to a close, but I wanted to also ask and pick your brain about some of the books that have been most helpful to you that might be also helpful to someone else who's searching and delving into these things. What are some of your favorite resource type books?
Okay. I think Ronald Molheiser is a wonderful spiritual writer. And one of his books that I really like a lot, got a lot out of, was called The Holy Longing. The Holy Longing by Ronald Rollheiser. I mean, I could give you a list of a bunch of books, but try to think of, you know, the ones that really speak to my heart. I think that another one is, it's right here in this bag, actually, because I brought it with me this morning, is a book by a Carmelite nun, and her name is Ruth Burroughs. And it sounds a little maybe out of reach, maybe something that wouldn't attract most people by the title, but I'm telling you, she's got good things to say in here. And it's called Guidelines for Mystical Prayer. Ruth Burroughs, Guidelines for Mystical Prayer. Another author who is very very good is Anthony DeMello. Now, he comes out of the Eastern tradition. He has died, but he was a Jesuit also in India. He actually is an Indian. He wrote some interesting books. I particularly found the one called Awareness to be quite good. I liked that. Ronald Rollheiser also wrote, and this is worth noting, a book called Prayer. See if it has a subtitle. Prayer, Our Deepest Longing. He's into longing, I guess, the holy longing. And Prayer, Our Deepest Longing. That's a very good book. Another author who is easy to read and people, you know, people tend to gravitate toward her is Joyce Rupp, R-U-P-P. And she's written a book on prayer, plus a number of other books on spirituality. And she's good. You know, people would like her. Easy to read. Trying to think of this. Anything else that jumps out at me? You might enjoy Pope Francis's The Joy of the Gospel. That's a good one too. And the new one coming out on the environment. These are definitely, both of them are tying in with social issues, you know, that leave the world a better place than you found it. So that's what he's about,
Yeah, that's really good. I appreciate you speaking with me and also mentioning those resources, because I like to have show notes for each episode for people who are interested in, like, whatever next step, finding a director or finding a good book, just get them on their way. And so this has been really nice, and I really appreciate you chatting with me. I really hope you enjoyed the show today. Please come by sparkmymuse.com for related show notes and links and all kinds of other information. Don't forget to subscribe, and please give us 5 stars on iTunes.